Silence.
Oppenheimer.
I think they're talking about us. No way.
I myself am strange and unusual.
This is Nerd Play Radio.
Nerd alert!
These nerds are a threat to our way of life.
See, this is the stuff that brings nerds together.
So it's sort of social. Demented and sad, but social, right?
If I'm interested in it, then by definition, it is nerdy.
Are you in loser denial or something?
I'm a nerd, and I'm pretty proud of it.
My dad's a nerd.
And welcome to episode 76 of Nerd Pride Radio. 76. Okay, first off, did you know that there have been four towns in the U.S.? Four! Named 76? Weird. But better than that. In the year 2076, the planet Sedna reaches its closest point to the sun, and thus its closest pass to Earth. At that time, it will be only, wait for it, 76 astronomical units away from us. So, plan your trip now. Ask me how I'm doing today. Go on. Ask me. I am awesome. My name is Mike Jones. I am a D&D / Pathfinder nerd, a history nerd, a sci-fi nerd, a comic book nerd, a computer nerd, movie nerd, comic nerd, science nerd, gaming nerd. Plus, there's like seven other kinds of nerd. I only wish I was nerdy enough to be. You're listening to Nerd Pride Radio, the place I go every week to haver on about all the nerd stuff that just won't fit in my brain anymore. As always, you're listening to the best-smelling podcast on the internet. That's right. Nerd Pride Radio smells exactly like the inside of a Crown Royal bag stuffed with dice. Oh, yeah. But let's get right into it. This is the meticulously plotted portion of my podcast. This is the time for me where I've talked about whatever has been on my mind for the last week. If something strikes me as interesting during the course of my busy, busy week, I add it to my master list right here on my handy-dandy pocket mod, and the best stuff off that list gets spewed out all over you guys every week when I record. You lucky dogs. So what is the first thing on my master list? Updates! I kind of left you hanging last week. I'm listening back to my episode last week, and I realized I started a sentence with, "The danger of writing science fiction for me is," and then I trailed off because, I did something overly clever to my own mind, and then I went and ruined it by over-explaining it, and then by the time I got done, with my meta talk, I wound up completely forgetting that I had a sentence started and just left it there. So, just to update you, the danger of writing science fiction for me, here we go. And I can do this with any writing, but science fiction especially, I get so distracted by the science. I get so distracted by trying to develop exactly what that space station will look like, or trying to figure out, for example, hold on, there's a Java update here, and I just want to, no, I don't want to update Java right now, thank you. Okay, it's still recording. Anyway, I get so sidetracked with the technical details of stuff. So, for example, I've set up the space station, but hey, just out of curiosity, because we're looking out a window towards the surface of one of the moons of Jupiter here, and the scene is going to be rotating because our space station is rotating. Well, I already said that we're maintaining this level of gravity in the outer ring, so how fast is it rotating? Oh, let's see. Once every 2 minutes? Really? That's fast. Okay, I got it. And I'll sit there and I'll work out the math and I'll plan these details, but of course, you know, that's not just purely a danger of science fiction. I can do that with any genre. I can sit there and waste 45 minutes trying to come up with a name. So, I mean, because it's got to be the perfect name, and it's got to fit into this scheme, and it's got to be, I could go forever, but science fiction is just doubly easy to kind of get yourself distracted and you wander away from something. And so again, the point that I was making last week was that, hey, it was nice to be on something that had sort of a deadline, and I couldn't allow myself to get too far afield like I normally would. So there you go. That was the hanging sentence there. I don't know if any of you noticed it. I don't know if any of you cared about it. But it bugged me when I listened back and I realized I never finished my thought. So, there. Done. And speaking of that, by the way, as I was listening back to the podcast last week, that particular section was in the gaming table, and I realized at that point that, okay, I play this character in a game, and then I went and wrote a story about this character that I play in a game, and then I have this podcast, and I go on my own podcast, and I describe to you guys the process of me writing a story about my character that I play in some game, and then there I was, and then this is where it all came full circle for me, the total meception moment of it, as I'm listening back to myself as I'm talking about writing a story about the character I play in this game. And not only was I listening to myself, but I was also realizing that, oh, wait, I have some meta commentary that I need to make on this, which is, you know, so now I bring it and I repodcast about it. And the upshot of all of it, I'm a total narcissist. Holy cow. Because not only did I do all that, but I thoroughly enjoyed every portion of it. I had a great time and I love telling you about it. So that's me. I'm full of myself. Kind of like it. But enough of that. Hey, beyond how great I am, there's also a flip side to this. And that's this. And that would be yet another installment of my all too frequent segment, Mike Was Wrong. Yeah. Specifically, it is Matsogner's Game is the name of my brother's book. And not technically wrong, I just didn't have the information at hand, and so therefore I didn't make a guess. The problem I had was my brother's number two book in his Nornworld series is Matsogner's Game, and for the life of me, as I was trying to come up with it on the fly, because I hadn't planned to talk about it, didn't have anything written down, as I was trying to come up with it at the time, I couldn't come up with Matsogner. All I could come up with was Mithrandir, which is, of course, the elven name for Gandalf in the Lord of the Rings series. And I knew it wasn't right. Mithrandir's Game. Mithrandir. And every time I said it, I'm like, no, that's Gandalf. No, it's still Gandalf. You're not helping yourself, dude. And I could not get over that mental block. And it wasn't until much later that I sat down and I went, okay, game. And then finally was able to backtrack to get to Matsogner. And then, of course, you know, I just opened up my website and, you know, it's right there, and my brother's tweeting about it, and it's, you know, it's not like the name isn't there in my face. So, my apologies, Kyle. I feel really, really bad for not being able to come up with a name last week. I should know better. I should be a better brother, don't you think? Yeah, probably so. Also, in the all too frequent segment, Mike Was Wrong! I mentioned the Harrison Ford movie Mosquito Coast, and I mentioned in it Martha Plimpton, a teenage Martha Plimpton, played Harrison Ford's daughter in the movie Mosquito Coast, and I knew I was wrong the moment I said it. I just couldn't remember what the truth was, and it turns out the truth is that River Phoenix played Harrison Ford's son in Mosquito Coast, and I didn't look it up or go back and rewatch the movie, so I'm not sure exactly why she was there. But Martha Plimpton was some sort of local or a colleague's daughter or something like that. I don't remember. Was not Harrison Ford's daughter, but was, in fact, the creepy teenage girl who was hitting on Harrison Ford's son in the movie. So there you go. I know most of you were probably losing sleep over that. I'm so glad I was able to set the record straight. And now, what's up next?
And now for something completely different.
Yeah, something completely different. This is just stuff I don't have a category for yet. And I don't have a category for this one because it's kind of political. And I don't want to get this podcast to a point ever where I need an actual category with intro music and everything for political stuff, because I hope I don't talk about it that often. But it's been on my mind. It's not quite a rage. It's just some thoughts. Charlie Hebdo, or Charlie Hebdo, if you're American, Charlie Hebdo, and I'm guessing that that's the French pronunciation, I think. That's how I've heard other people saying it, so I'm saying it. Obviously, Charlie Hebdo, in a controversy over publishing material depicting the Prophet Muhammad, specifically in cartoon form, the offices of Charlie Hebdo, a magazine in France, were shot up by Muslim extremists, and 12 people died, and it's been pretty horrifying. And as a result, there's been a huge outcry and a bunch of support for Charlie Hebdo, a bunch of support for free speech, and people have been standing up and they've been retweeting everything Charlie Hebdo does, and the initial print run of, you know, a magazine that has a circulation of, I think, like 30,000, had a print run of their very next issue after this that ran into 5 million copies, more than that, I don't even know. Something huge, with, nobly for them, all proceeds going to help the victims' families. Wonderful that they would do that. And also wonderful to see the world standing up for free speech. Free speech is a huge issue for me. I am a huge fan of free speech, which, you know, is not me going out on a limb and being all brave and stuff. Of course, I'm a big fan of free speech, and everyone in the world should be. But as I'm watching the response from Americans, part of me wonders how hypocritical we are. And I don't say this lightly, because I don't want it to be taken as in, you know, that we're doing something wrong in supporting Charlie Hebdo. Because, okay, look, they're an extreme leftist magazine with an extreme leftist point of view, and they have published stuff that is very offensive to all sorts of people all the time, mostly people who are on the right, mostly people who are right-wing extremists, but they also have published some stuff that even people on the left or across the spectrum can look at and go, yeah, but that's pretty racist, dude. Seriously, that's some pretty racist, sexist bullshit. Sorry, stumbled over the word bullshit, and I'm detracting from my point. That they are pretty much offensive all the time, which is, I absolutely support. That is their right to free speech. That, as much as, you know, France has an equivalent right to free speech as we do, and everyone's free speech is limited in some form or another, some more than others. And, but they say some pretty offensive stuff. That maybe some of the people who are supporting them now wouldn't normally support that particular speech on a given day. You know, you support their right to say it, even if you completely disagree with them. And that's the point that we're getting to now. And that's where, and what I'm saying is, that's where we should be. That even if you find Charlie Hebdo offensive, even if you find them, outrageous and egregious, you find them racist, you find them bigoted in their own way, despite their leftist principles, et cetera, et cetera. You can disagree with them loudly if you wish. You can refuse to look at their stuff. You can refuse to pass it on to others. But you also should absolutely support their right to say what they're saying. And I'm not the first person to say this. I'm paraphrasing other greater minds than myself. But here's where I'm going with this. We are, as a human race right now, supporting Charlie Hebdo in this time of crisis. We are supporting their right to free speech exactly the way we should. But it's easy to do that when it's a French magazine nobody's ever heard of. And we hear that they've said some things that are offensive, but, you know, to our minds, it's, oh, well, yeah, but they're just offending Muslims. Who cares? Which is, I'm not saying a proper attitude. And it got me to wondering what would happen in this country if the same sort of thing happened. And depending on who it is that's getting shot and killed, would we have the same set of reactions? For example, and this is where he gets me, the Westboro Baptist Church. We all agree that the Westboro Baptist Church was and is full of idiots, and they're out there doing terrible, terrible stuff in the name of free speech and in the name of freedom of religion. And they're spreading hate. They're spreading evil, evil hate, and they're just, in general, bad people for doing what they're doing. So, at the height of Westboro Baptist Church's media center stage, whatever it is, that, you know, 10 years ago, 5 years ago, when they were getting the most attention and they were at their height, what if they were standing outside of a soldier's funeral, all right? They're standing outside the funeral of a dead veteran, a recently killed in action dead veteran, and they're protesting outside of his funeral or her funeral carrying around their giant God hates fags signs and denouncing homosexuality to the world and saying that dead soldiers are what we deserve for supporting gay people. And they're doing all of this. And then at their protest, on camera, some ex-soldier comes forward with a gun and shoots four of them dead there in the street at their own protest. We would all, I think, jump up and say, oh yeah, no, that was wrong. You absolutely shouldn't kill somebody for saying, saying what they believe. You shouldn't kill somebody over their free speech. All right. We would all say that, but then also I have this feeling that a lot of this country would sit back and go, yeah, but they were kind of asking for it. I mean, really, they were kind of asking for it. That was, seriously. And we shouldn't. We absolutely shouldn't, because you know what? Nobody's asking for that. Nobody. It doesn't matter how egregious their hate speech is. It doesn't matter how awful they are as people. They don't deserve to get shot and killed. But sadly, we have a lot of that rhetoric going around, and a lot of people who say, God, you know what? I wish that they'd all just die. I wish that they'd all, and what would happen if your wish came true? That because of their free speech, they got shot. Would you be out there supporting the Westboro Baptist Church's right to free speech? Would you be out there buying up millions of copies of their latest newsletter because they've said that the proceeds are going to go to help their family? Would you be giving money to help the families of the Westboro Baptist Church members because they've faced this tragedy? Would we give them even a fraction of the support that we've given Charlie Hebdo? No, absolutely we wouldn't. And I know we wouldn't. I would hope that the rhetoric for free speech would be there. I would hope that we'd all be standing up going, yeah, oh, hey, they were hateful, horrible people. And I'm not necessarily sorry they're gone, but oh, man, we need to stand up for free speech. We can't let things like this happen, all right? Or would there be a more vocal fraction of us that are out there cheering? All right, you want another example? How about Jack Chick? Oh, yeah, see, there's another good one. This guy's been spreading hate and misinformation and lies for decades with his chick tracts and his comic books and his terrible publications. So what happens? What happens when some freak gunman goes in to Jack Chick Publications? All right, goes into a magazine's offices, just like Charlie Hebdo, right? And winds up shooting up the offices and killing 12 staff members at Jack Chick Publications. Would we be buying up their latest publications in huge numbers because the proceeds go to their families? Would we be retweeting everything that they say? Would we be passing along their information and giving them gallons of free publicity for their cause because we want to uphold free speech and we want to stand up for free speech? Would we be doing that? I don't know. I don't think we would. I think there's a lot of people who would be cheering that, and I find that sad. Because free speech is free speech. It really is, regardless of the content, and we all have to be ready to stand up for that. And I don't see this whole thing. There hasn't been a single bit of humor in this whole bit. I've made my point. I don't like to get this dark on my podcast, but I couldn't get it off of my mind. And I'm not drawing any conclusions, and I'm saying standing up for free speech is the right thing to do. That's what I'm saying. And I'm also saying that we are a nation full of hypocrites, and I hope that if we are challenged in a way that puts our morals to the test far more than Islamic terrorists shooting a bunch of French leftists over a magazine that we don't know anything about, and oh, that's so easy to stand up for. If it came down to something that we couldn't turn into something, pardon the pun, cartoonishly evil, if it came down to something that was more challenging to us, more personal and close to home, defending speech that we actually hate, defending speech that we actually are offended by. Could we and would we do that? And I hope the answer is yes. I know I would, and I hope the answer is yes for everybody else out there. But, oh well. Anyway, enough being dark. Enough of that. You know what? It's time for a brand new segment to this podcast. Now it's time for a new segment, because you know what I talk about a lot? Yeah, I talk about podcasts. You know who likes podcasts? Pod people! I should listen to the pod. That's right. This is my new Pod People segment. You'll never close your ears again. Okay, does that tagline work? Because that was the tagline for Invasion of the Body Snatchers when they introduced the Pod People. It was, you'll never close your eyes again. I don't think I can get away with that one. I'll come up with a new tagline. Doesn't make any difference. I have recently cut out a bunch of my podcasts, and I've changed up my listening habits, and I realized as I was going to talk about it that I have so many conversations about podcasts on my podcast because I love podcasts, and so therefore it needs its own segment, and here it is. And like I say, I cut out a ton of my podcasts. It's just, it got to where there are so many of them that, I don't know, I've been listening a while, maybe they're in a slump, or maybe I'm just not in the mood for it, but there are ones that I still, every time they come up, I am listening immediately and can't wait. You know, me Like Trivia, obviously, my own, obviously. And I've got a few others that are real favorites. I love The Bugle. I love The Indoor Kids. I love, there's Thrilling Adventure Hour, but I've still not even caught up on Thrilling Adventure Hour. There's a couple that I'm missing, but there are some of them that I just can't wait to listen to. And I'm so excited when they're on. Harmontown is still getting there. Because, in fact, Harmontown, they gave up D&D, and it was kind of close to my heart on that one. But they're going to take up Shadowrun. And it was Jeff Davis in making up their Shadowrun characters. And Jeff isn't even on. I think they're actually going to play today. I'm in the middle of an episode right now. And Jeff's not even there to play this character. Oh, I'm hoping he decided he was going to make a teenage girl. He wants to make a disaffected punk rock emo teenage girl. And I don't even know what her abilities are. I can't remember if he said she was going to be, I think he said she was going to be some kind of wizard, magic user. All right. So, close to my heart indeed. Because, you know, teenage girl, wizard, that's actually how Dothan started out. She was going to be a teenage sorcerer. And instead I wound up changing her to a bard later. But it was brilliant. And his description of her, and I'm like, yes, no, that is a deep character. And I can tell he's doing it because he really wants to work on role-playing a character in this game. And it was spectacular. And sadly, Harmon's wife, Erin, could only make fun of him for it and act like this was some sort of bad idea. But God, I think it's brilliant. I can't wait to see how their Shadowrun game goes. But that's not even why I'm here to talk about podcasts. The ones I cut out, maybe I shouldn't even mention them by name. They're just, that would be mean. But there's a bunch of them that just, ones that I used to love. Oh, I'll mention them by name. Film Sack, I've just kind of, I don't know. I'm not excited about Film Sack. Even when it's a movie I've seen, recently, it's like, okay, I get it. I'm just not thrilled. And so I'm setting it aside. The Top 5 podcast, Comedy Film Nerds, the WTF podcast with Mark Maron, that one I've been kind of drifting away from for a long time. And I realize I'm just not excited about them. So I'm going to set them aside, not listen to them for a while. And because there's others that I set aside, like Nerdist. I set aside the Nerdist podcast for over a year, and now suddenly I'm back listening to it, and I'm realizing, oh, why did I ever put this away? I love the Nerdist. So they come and go. I guess it's just what my mood depends on. But I do want to say, for Thrilling Adventure Hour, I'm up to what now? Episode 60, maybe, on Thrilling Adventure Hour? And it just keeps getting better. I really, really enjoy this. I think Colonel TikTok and his time traveling adventures are maybe my least favorite of the ones, but I mean, Beyond Belief with the supernatural investigating alcoholics, still my absolute favorite. But Sparks Nevada, Marshall on Mars. Oh, it has gotten, it started off a little bit lame the first couple of episodes, and then I've gotten far enough into it that I realize that, oh yeah, no, there's a whole drama behind the scenes here. There's a whole thing going on that, oh, once you've listened a little bit, you're like, oh, that's really funny. Really funny stuff. I just can't tell you. Thrilling Adventure Hour. If you didn't take my advice last time and go get Thrilling Adventure Hour and start listening to it, go now and start listening to it. All right. Start from episode one and just listen all the way through. It is really, really worth your time. All right. The Tales from the Black Lagoon segment. Oh, the only thing about those that I don't like is that they're short. Oh, they're only, They're only 5 or 10 minutes long. I just 15 minutes sometimes. They're so short. I want more of those because they're brilliant. But you can also tell that those are way more intensive to write because they're very stylistically specific. And I will just tell you that anytime Jimmy Stewart shows up as the opium addict, it's literally, he's not playing an opium addict. It is, the character is Jimmy Stewart, opium addict. And it's brilliant. If I could do an impression of it, I would. I can't even tell you. Although, you know what? I just said I didn't care much for Colonel TikTok and his time-traveling adventures, but he did just wind up, what's the guys' names? Sacco and Vanzetti, the anarchists? Holy crap. He winds up landing smack in the middle of their apartment as they're plotting something, and the adventure had nothing to do with them. They just happened to be there while he's doing something else. Brilliant. Absolutely brilliant. So go listen to Thrilling Adventure Hour. These guys are great, and they deserve your patronage. They really do. And I guess if you happen to be in L.A. and you get a chance to see the live show, God, don't tell me about it. I will be so jealous. So jealous. Speaking of live shows, I told you last week that Weird Al is coming. Weird Al is coming, and not only is Weird Al coming, but, okay, the tickets, still not on sale. Everywhere else, there are dates before mine and after mine, and all of them, tickets are on sale right now. You can buy them. Mine is the one lone location that says, ooh, sales coming soon, or whatever the thing is. Oh, I'm crazy. There are shows, like, the same week-ish of mine, I think, like, just a little bit before or a little after, or something like that. There's shows that are sold out already. My tickets aren't even on sale. But here's the thing. I'm looking at the various venues around the Midwest, because I'm in the Midwest, and there's tickets for $80 or the special VIP passes for $130. And look, an $80 ticket, that's too much. $80 ticket means once you add on the fees and the taxes and the other garbage that goes with it, that's a $110 ticket, $120 ticket. Easy, okay? I can't afford to take 5 or 6 of us to a show at $100 to $120 a pop. I can't do it. All right, but here's the thing. I found an outdoor amphitheater in the list that was showing that had him appearing, and that's where I'm going. I'm going to. It's an outdoor venue. It's a stage set up at an outdoor venue with open seating, and I'm going to bring my own folding chairs to sit in. All right, and I found one of those. And the tickets at that venue, $30. Holy crap. Do you honestly think I can go see Weird Al for $30 a ticket? I am peeing my pants. I'm so excited. Holy crap. But this has nothing to do with pod people or podcasts in general. I'm just really, really excited about seeing Weird Al. All right, I've totally lost my notes here. Let me get them pulled back up and see where I've gone from here. All right, I wasn't going to do this. But you know what? I wasn't going to have a gaming table this week. We're playing tonight, and there's been some stuff going on in the Pathfinder games. I talk about Pathfinder all the time. But turns out something happened today, so it's time to visit my gaming table. I've got Dungeon Master's Guide. I've got 12-sided die. Role-playing games, video games, card games, if it fits on my gaming table, then I am here to share it with you. This is going to be really quick. I just want to share the game Fiasco. I know almost nothing about it yet. Almost nothing is a lie. I've watched Will Wheaton and some friends on his show, Tabletop YouTube show on the Geek and Sundry channel. And I have watched Will Wheaton and his friends set up and play through Act 1 of a Fiasco, apparently is a game that is played in two acts. And I've watched them set up and I've watched them do the first act. And it's really exciting. Fiasco is a game where you play out a caper movie of some sort, where you play out one of these, Coen Brothers is the example that keeps getting used. Coen Brothers films, for example, like Fargo or like Burn After Reading, stuff where you've got an ensemble cast and all of the characters are deeply, deeply flawed. They are all broken in some way, and yet they all have these huge plans, these huge things. Get Shorty, there's another good example of them. Train Spotting was given as an example for the Scottish noir setting for this. This is a little off. But the idea is you have these deeply flawed characters with these huge, grandiose plans, all right, and this big, convoluted, interconnected set of people and ideas and needs and things, and then you play out what is essentially a movie, and you do it without a game master, because there's rules for how you set scenes and how people act their way through it and how you provide support or not and who's going to determine the resolution of each part of it. And it just looks brilliant. It just looks like a lot of fun. I mean, I'm really excited watching it. Watching them set up, I think watching the setup for Fiasco, go watch the video. Go check my forums. Right, in nerdprideradio.com/forums, go to Nerds Talking About Games, and there is a thread in there called Fiasco. Click the links, follow it to the videos, and just watch. Watch Will Wheaton on Geek and Sundry play this game out with his friends. I could do the setup portion of Fiasco and be happy as a clam. Honestly, that is so my style. Even if I never played the game, to sit around with 3, 4, 5 friends and just develop a game, develop the setting right there, just based on some rolls of the dice and us taking turns picking things off the charts, I would have so much fun just doing that piece. I don't need to ever get to the actual game, although the actual game also looks really super fun. And with the scene setting and the GM-less structure, it reminds me a lot of zombie cinema, so I have a little bit of basis for how to deal with it. But I haven't seen the rules. I've seen the play sets. The play sets are the specific scenarios that go with it, so you have the charts with where all the dice will go and the different options you could have. And this thing can play out. The one that we watched Will Wheaton play is Saturday Night 78. It's a showbiz and cocaine-driven Club 54 scene-type thing. Set in 1978. Spectacular setting. But there's other ones for crime dramas, Scottish noir, like I mentioned. There's ones for time travel or a space station or playing the monster politics of behind-the-scenes Dungeons & Dragons crap. Or one of the other suggestions was De Medici, where you're playing out 14th, 15th century medieval Italy. There's Elizabethan England. There's just millions of these to choose from, and the whole thing looks really, really brilliant. So, I don't know anything else about it. Stan has already hit me up to try and talk me into... this literally all happened just this morning. So, Stan has already tried to hit me up for, let's get together on Roll20. Let's make this happen. I think it's a great idea. I hope we do it. I would love to see it come around. I mean, again, time's always limited, but, oh, this looks like so much fun. It's a great filler game. Maybe one, if Darkseid wants to take a break, or maybe one that we'll play on the alternate Thursdays, or something like that. I'm going to go buy it, look into it. I don't know if it's free online. I don't know if it's something I have to buy. I have no idea. I haven't even looked that far yet, but Fiasco looks really cool. Just go watch the videos and have a good time, even if you never touch the game. Even if I never go any further with this. Go watch the videos. You'll be glad you learned some. It's really kind of cool. But enough of my gaming table. Now it's time for a nerd culture report.
I thought this was bowling for weirdos.
Aw, no, Gonzo, but you're very, very close. On my nerd culture report this week, I didn't know if I should make it a Roku or if I should turn it into a Nerd Pride book report, because it's a little of both. Because my two youngest sons, ages 8 and 11, both just finished reading the book Holes by some author whose name I've never bothered to learn. And Holes is one of my favorite books ever. I love the book Holes. It is really well written. It is inspiring to me because Holes demonstrates that you can write a book for kids, and it's written at a fifth grade level, approximately. You can write a book for kids that tells a great and entertaining story for both children and adults, and one that doesn't pull any punches. One that it does the kind of thing that you used to see more often, like Roald Dahl stories and stuff like that, where you wind up with kids in a really brutal setting, maybe exaggeratedly brutal. But this is a story that deals with death and revenge and racism and deals with all of it in a meaningful way. And again, it doesn't pull any punches. It's written for fifth graders. Yeah, I had my third grader reading it, and he finished up, and he adored it. Both of them did. And you can put all of that in there and tell a real story to kids, and it's just powerful to me. All right. And not only did I enjoy the book, but my wife and I both read the book, and then we went and watched the movie, and the movie is the greatest thing Shia LaBeouf has ever done in his entire career. It's a great movie. It really well captures what happens in the book. It was really well put together. I can't tell you how much fun it was. And the best part if you've never read the book or seen the movie, I recommend that you go do both. Go pick up the book, read it. It'll take you a couple of nights. It's not that big a deal. You'll enjoy the heck out of it, and then go watch the movie, and you'll also enjoy that. That is a promise from me to you. And for me, one of the best parts is I happened to be in the room. My wife and I were both in the room for both of our kids when they finished up the book. Both of us were there for the aha moment. There's a big reveal at the end, and I'm not going to spoil it for anybody. But there's a big reveal at the end where you get everything that has happened in this book. Every single thing all has a point. There is nothing wasted in this book, and everything comes together. And there is a moment when you go, because he was, I get it. All right. And I got to be there for both of them when they had that moment. And it was beautiful because you don't see that too often from a little kid reading a book. You don't get to be there for the moment when a little kid is reading a book and has a moment of brilliant insight where they are inspired by something. And I got to be there for both of the kids, and it struck both of them in pretty much the same way, and it was really cool and really beautiful. And the 11-year-old Eli, he says this is absolutely his favorite book ever. And having guinea pigs are – they just got fresh water. They just got fresh food. I don't know what's wrong with them. Hold on 2 seconds. I don't know what their problem is. They're just lonely, I guess. Oh, God, maybe one of them died and the other one's just mourning. Now I would feel bad, but they're guinea pigs. These are old guinea pigs too. They are at least three now. They never live that long for us, so that's bizarre. But anyway, but Eli says that Holes is his favorite book ever, and it was great because his mom recommended it to him, and he was so happy with it when it was done that he was actually willing to listen to her and start taking her recommendations on other things that maybe he'd like to try then. And it was just cool. It was cool that to see him, because he's not the one who's ever been real passionate about reading. The 8-year-old is, certainly. But Eli has just never been that passionate about reading. And now suddenly, yeah, he's got a bunch of books he likes, a bunch of series that he's worked his way through, and he's tried all sorts of different things. But this is the first time I've ever seen him really that thrilled to try a book, and it was so cool. So Holes, again, if you haven't read the book, read the book. And then, if you haven't seen the movie, after you read the book, go see the movie. You'll love it. It's great. But you know what? I am completely done with the meticulously plotted portion of the podcast. And you know what that means? That means that Aiden's here.
What?
That's right.
When did I get here? What's going on?
And Aiden may or may not join me on the pod-o-matic. God damn it. Who turns this off?
Noah. No, Eli, because Noah keeps messing with it.
God darn it. Hot dog. This. Oh, wait, no, it's not hot dog this week. Hold on. It's Holy Priceless Collection of Etruscan Snoods, Batman. This is the Nerd Pride Radio Pod-O-Matic. At the end of every cast, I bring out R2 and his fully pimped out Pod-O-Matic bubble, and he rolls up random topics for me to talk about. And where do these topics come from, you ask? Well, that is where you come in. You want to hear me haver on about something? You send your question or topic to me by email, or better yet, in a private message on our forums, and I'll add it to my Pod-O-Matic list, because Pod-O-Matic is about whatever you want it to be. Yeah, Holy Priceless Collection of Etruscan Snoods, Batman.
Snoods?
Snoods, it's like a hood. It's like the definition I got is a medieval, maybe an armored hood, because you'd have a snood that goes with your chainmail. But then I also saw pictures of of women who their snood looks more like a some kind of loose hairnet thing, a bun holder on the back of their head.
Yeah,
I don't know.
My girlfriend sends me so many snoods.
Yeah, I don't want to know. Oh. Yeah. You have a vast collection of snood pictures on your computer? Is that where we're going?
Yeah, that's where we're going.
Oh, that's terrible. All right. Straight into the Podomatic. And this is number 51. 51 is from Ronster. Oh, so cool. Why is there no 52? How the hell did I do that? There is no 52. I'm going to erase that sucker right now.
Well,
I have to erase the randomizing element so the thing will fall off the list. That is weird. Okay. Anyway, 51 is from Ronster. And Ronster says, oh, good, I've been waiting for this question. Two-parter, what are the next three movies in your Netflix queue? Okay, that is the first part of the two-parter. So hold on 2 moments while I... Aiden, sing him a song, quick. I'm going to go to look at Netflix.
I've been at sea since 32. I've laid my share of line. Me leg's been crushed, me eye poked out, yet still I'm feeling fine. And I would leave this port once more to ride the ocean blue. If only I had never seen the ghost of a ship and her crew. Yo-ho, yo-ho.
Okay, that's is that from choir this year?
No, that's from choir like 3 years ago.
Really?
I know so many sea shanties now.
You do know a lot of sea shanties. That is absolutely true. Okay, here's the deal. In my DVD queue, right now at home, we have Boyhood, which was my wife's pick, and I'm very excited about seeing. We have my pick, which is Hellboy 2, The Golden Army, which I know, I've just never seen it, okay? I've always meant to, I've never seen it. I've watched the original Hellboy, I just haven't seen Hellboy 2. And we watched the first, 20 minutes of Hellboy 2, and then the disc failed, and we pulled the sucker out, and there's an actual visible crack in the disc. And so Netflix has sent us a new one, so I'm now, 20 minutes into Hellboy 2, so we'll get there. And then the third disc that we have here at home is The Goonies, because everyone in the house has seen The Goonies except the two little ones, so it's their turn to watch The Goonies with us. And so we're going to do that. What?
Didn't the question specify your next three movies?
Right. I'm getting to that. So the next three... Well, here's the sad part is that our queue doesn't go in order. The queue is simply just stuff that happens to be floating near the top. I mean, literally, we watch a movie, and just before we mail it back, we then decide what movie we're going to have next, and we move it to the top of the list, because we have like 400 and something in our DVD queue. But the next three that are in the queue, whether it's the ones we're getting or not, are Cypher. I don't know what Cypher is. Cypher, it's a 2002 movie. Starring Jeremy Northam and Lucy Liu. Average Joe enters the world of corporate espionage, spying on rival companies. It's all very exciting until he realizes he's being used as a pawn. That must be one Lisa put in there, but man, looks like something I'd like. And then Black Snake Moan, with Sam Jackson and Christina Ricci. And then Purge Anarchy, which, look, I saw the first Purge, and you moan all you want, pal. I liked it. I think... Yeah, The Purge is a stupid concept. I
agree.
Absolutely stupid and unreasonable, and it's impractical, would never happen, would never work. But that's not the point. The point is they're making some cultural commentary with The Purge, and I personally think they made some interesting points. And I think the movie went in an interesting direction for being relatively low budget for a horror thriller like this, and they made some interesting choices, and the ending was fascinating to me. I was satisfied with how the movie went. I enjoyed watching The Purge. And I've heard that The Purge Anarchy, so the sequel to Purge, I've heard that this is, okay, Purge did well enough that they now have the budget they really wanted, and this is the movie they would have liked to have done the first time, but didn't have the budget for. And so I'm excited to see what they do. I really am. I don't think Purge was earth-shaking, groundbreaking, it's not some kind of huge classic, but I thought it was a good, solid film. I really enjoyed that.
I agree, but the reason I moan and groan about it is everyone within the public saying, but it could totally happen!
Okay, well, yeah, that's because the public is full of idiots. I'm with you on that.
Not including you guys.
Right, no, all of you who said that, we love you, and we understand that you had thoughtful, justifiable reasons for saying such stupid shit, but really, it was stupid.
We're your friends, and we think you have a problem.
hey, oh. 30. No, 03.
You need to learn to read.
I cannot read dice. It is the curse of my gaming life. All right, number 3 is from Mrs. Darks. Mrs. Darks says, how are chores divided in your household? Assuming that the boys have chores, what happens to an assigned chore when the child goes to college? We don't have assigned chores in that sense. We have a rather nebulous, hey, stuff needs to get done. And we have a...
Who got in trouble today?
For...
Well, I'm just saying that that's how we decide.
Oh, that's... No, that's... Oh, God, that's right. That's right. He's absolutely dead on about this. This is one of the best ways to get chores done around your house. I highly recommend it. All right, there are certain chores that have to get done. You know, people have got to feed the dogs, and they've got to clean their rooms, and the dishes have to get done, and the garbage has to go out, and there's a million things that need to get done around the house. That's true. And in general, you know, you're mostly responsible for your domain, the area. You know, if you're a kid, you're certainly responsible for your own room, and you're certainly responsible for helping with the communal areas that everyone shares and everyone messes up. But when kids get in trouble, job card. Oh. This is the best. This is, you get in trouble for whatever it is. Doesn't make any difference. What, you got late at school? All right, job card. Oh, caught you hitting your brother? All right, job card. Or sister if we had girls, but we don't. You get in trouble, you get a job card. And job card is some chore that you really don't want to do, but you have to before you get any of your privileges back. Oh, you want to watch TV? You want to go off and play? You want to do anything fun? All right, well then great. Then you're going to finish your job card first, and then you can go back to whatever you were doing. And it's great because, especially on a day when they can really get going, all right, you've got a job card, and then they yell or they throw a fit about it. Okay, fine. Another one. You need more? It's like adding Saturdays to Bender's sentence. It's great.
I think I'm just going to shut my mouth.
Exactly. And so, you know, often when they get in trouble, it's just one job card. But sometimes if they're having a real tough time of it, sometimes it builds into two because they just couldn't deal with it yet.
My record's 4, so.
Right. And then they go off and your house gets cleaner because they got in trouble. And there have been many times that we've made the joke about, well, hey, if you guys want to act up now, it'd be a good time because we've got all sorts of stuff to do out here. So what happens when they go off to college? It just kind of devolves to the rest of them. Jacob comes home from school once every week, once every 2 weeks, sometimes less often, sometimes more. And when he's here, we try not to put a whole lot of load on him because, you know, when there's some of this mess that he wasn't here for this, he's not responsible for it. But you know, if he's been home all weekend long, then yeah, before you leave on Sunday, dude, clean that crap up. Look, that is your pile of clothes there. Just go get it out of here. If you're not going to wash it, at least go put it in a hamper somewhere, and you can take care of it next time you come back. Do something.
It's not really a pile. It's more of a very large sack.
Well, yeah, no, he does. He keeps it all in a sack. Oh, see, did you see the folding bag that we gave him?
Yeah.
All right, we got a duffel bag, for those of you who haven't seen the inside of my house. We got a folding duffel bag. The thing folds up to a nice little small package, but when you open it up, duffel bag. And it's got wheels on it, and it's really cool. And we gave this to Jacob because he was going on a trip to Minneapolis, and we thought, oh, hey, it'd be a nice bag for you to use for that. And so now he's using it to carry his stuff back and forth to school. And the thing, when it unfolds, is gigantic. And when you walk into our house, and there's the love seat right in front of the door as you walk in, and it has been his habit when he's home from college that he just comes in with all of his stuff, and he just piles it all on the love seat. It is his bag of dirty laundry, it's his backpack, it's his computer, it's a jacket and a coat, it's everything he's got that he brings in with him, and he just piles it there until someone comes in and goes, dude, you have a room. We kept your room for you. Go put your stuff in your room. What is wrong with you? And he just piles it all up there. Well, this folding duffel bag, is massive when it's unfolded. I had no clue. And so I come in, and not only does he have his usual pile of garbage there, he also now has this massive, massive duffel bag. And I don't even know if he had anything in it, but the thing is open, and it's huge, and it's just, like, balanced on top of this mountain of crap that he has piled on my love seat. It's terrifying.
And let me explain. When he says massive, we're talking about, like, two full-size bodies.
Right. Yeah, no. It is huge. It's like... Like, from the seat of the love seat, everything is stacked up with just his stuff to where, like, I'm eye level with the top of this pile.
Being 6 foot and all.
Ridiculous. Ridiculous. 87. 87 brings me to a number that I can't seem to reach. There it is. It's from Billy Bob. Hey, Billy Bob. And Billy Bob says... You said you work in a hospital and you fix computers. What is it you actually do?
He's a super spy doctor who works internationally, but now that you know, he's going to have to kill you.
I think his question was he wanted to know more details about my job itself.
Oh.
Yeah.
I messed up.
Yeah, don't worry about it. It happens all the time. We talked about this.
I don't want to die.
What I do is, it is a... state-run facility I say it's a hospital, but it has been at different times it was originally an asylum, and it was an insane asylum for the mentally ill, the mentally handicapped, hysterical women, and epileptics. That was back at the turn of the 19th to 20th century. Era. I think the thing was built in like 1892, something like that. I can't remember. It's old. And it was originally founded. It was the mentally defective, epileptics, and hysterical women. Great way to get rid of your wife in that day and age was
she's crazy.
Yeah, you claim that she's hysterical, and then she gets shipped off to an institution, and she's out of your way. Terrible, terrible stuff. And it was for many years you didn't ask for the history of the institution, but I'm going to give it to you. It got up to, at its peak, it had 2,000 residents there, and it was an actual working farm at the time. They had dairy cows, and so they actually provided milk for the region, and they slaughtered their own beef. They had their own slaughterhouse there, and they sold meat to the community, and the problem with it is that the people who were there, in a way, some people hold it up as some kind of model because, hey, look, here were the mentally ill, the mentally defective, the people who needed to be separated from society for whatever reason. But while they're here, they're still being productive and they're still earning their own keep. They're earning their own keep as slave laborers and prisoners. I mean, they weren't allowed to leave. And in fact, one of the problems you had is quite often, when it came time to see if you were ready to rejoin society, a lot of times, if you were one of the best workers out there, they found good reasons why you couldn't go rejoin society yet. Because, well, if we pronounce you cured and send you on your way, then we're losing one of our best workers. We can't do that. We couldn't do that. And all of this aside, the institution at that in that day and age, 100 years ago, was like every institution in America. Absolutely rife with horrible, horrible forms of abuse. Just terrible. I've enumerated some of those before, and this place was no different. It was a terrible place for the patients, the residents, for a long time. But it went from being an asylum to, very specifically, a mental treatment hospital for the mentally ill. And we still had lots of mentally handicapped folks who were there, that they're there just because they have a low IQ, not because they're mentally ill. But they were there because, well, they'd always been there and we didn't know where else to send them. And then eventually they weeded that down until it got, when I first signed on there, they'd just gone through a revamping. It was down to about 150 clients and they were all mentally ill. And it was a mental health treatment facility. And now this is 20 years later and it's actually 90, I think, now is what we have, but it's all sex offender treatment. So it's kind of a...
Well, that escalated quickly.
Yeah, it's somewhere between mental health treatment and low-grade prison. Guys who should be glad that they're there, because if they weren't there, they'd be sex offenders in prison instead of sex offenders in a mental health treatment facility. And a lot of them are never rejoining society, but this is where they are. And anyway, my job is I do computer support for this facility, as well as we cover all of Health and Human Services for the state. And so the guy who shares my office, Yancey, covers 20-something counties. I used to have the driving job, and I covered the 20 counties. But now I stay mostly in the facility. I work right around town, sometimes travel nearby, but mostly work right in town. And he does most of the driving. But every once in a while we switch off that, you know, if he's out sick or if he just needs a break, then he'll stick around, and I'll take the van and I'll go out and do the stuff out in the field. And we do – we are general computer guys. So it is you know, installation, repair, training, warranty work, software installation, software training, anything that people need. We're the frontline hands-on guys, and we have a huge, great team of people back in the main offices 100 miles away. And so we have all sorts of support for anything we need, but we're the frontline guys, and that's what I do. And I really, really enjoy my job. So does that answer it pretty well? 99. 99 is from Humongous. Oh, by the way, Humongous has promised to watch Blood Car.
Woo!
Yeah, I know. I'm excited,
too. You're going to really enjoy it.
Yeah.
Or have already enjoyed it.
Although, he actually posted up and said, yeah, I just watched the trailer for Blood Car, and I didn't know what I was getting into. I should have bargained for 2 Kurosawa movies. So, he's not wrong, but it's too late, sucker. What is the maximum number of dogs and cats you would own, from Humongous? 2.
Dogs.
Yeah, 2 dogs.
And no cats.
And that's what we have right now, is 2 dogs. And when these dogs are gone, then my new maximum will be 0 dogs. Previously, I have owned 3 cats, and I really liked my cats. And after the dogs are gone, if I was going to get another pet, it would be a cat, and I would own maximum now 2 cats, all right, if I was going to own a pet. But I think currently, and for the foreseeable future, my maximum is 0 cats.
Because of allergies.
So, well, no, even once you guys move out of the house, once Eli and his cat allergy are gone, and Noah, I assume Noah's going to have a cat allergy because he's got the guinea pig allergy, and he's just never been around cats on a long-term basis.
What about Mom, though?
Mom loves cats. We've owned cats for years, but it doesn't make any difference, because I think once the dogs are gone and the kids are out of the house and it's just me and her, I think our maximum is going to be 0 pets, because I don't want to take care of pets. I'm a selfish person that way. And I know. Lots of love, and they provide all sorts of entertainment and learning lessons and just companionship and enjoyment and joy. And you know what? I've had my share. I'm done. 0 pets. Does that make me a curmudgeon? I think
yes.
So. 42. It is the answer to the life, universe,
and everything.
42 is from Ronster again. Hey, Ron.
He's just all over the board.
Always is. Do you write in block letter, cursive, or some mixture of the two?
He uses Comic Sans.
Comic Sans is based on my handwriting. did little known fact. I write in block lettering. I don't call it block lettering. I just print. I use printing is how I've always said it. I can write cursive. I'm perfectly capable of it. I just don't enjoy it. I have my cursive writing. It turns out that my cursive writing is horrible. I have terrible cursive handwriting. I always have. It was commented on all the way through grade school, all the way through high school. And once I got to where I could type things, I was thrilled to death to just type things, because my handwriting was so bad. But then, at some point, I realized, hey, my printing isn't that bad. I mean, it's not great handwriting, but it's kind of cool looking, and it's legible. That's the big point. It's legible. And so I just started doing that. And because it occurred to me that my dad also prints. I mean, obviously he can write cursive. He certainly can. But it occurred to me at some point that I had never seen my dad do any cursive writing other than his signature. I think my mom even pointed it out at one point. He says, yeah, your daddy doesn't do cursive. I'm like, yeah, you're right, he doesn't. And I think my printing looks better than my cursive, and now I'm so out of practice at cursive that if I do it now, it starts looking like an 8-year-old did it.
Looks like the hair you pulled out of the drain.
It is bad. But I don't, I print. I print everything if I'm going to do handwriting. I prefer to type just because it's easier, and way more legible. But if I'm going to write something down, if I'm going to jot down notes for people or for myself or whatever, if you look at my Pocket Mod is full to the brim, of printed characters because that's what I do.
But you shouldn't really be looking at his Pocket Mod because that's in his wallet. I mean, that's an invasion of privacy.
Oh, so. It's not really. There's never anything in my Pocket Mod that I wouldn't share
with people. I know, but they'd still have to go into your wallet to go get it.
Well, that's true. That's true.
So, I mean, unless you ask, don't touch his Pocket Mod.
Shazam ISIS. Am I ever going to use that as a topic?
What does that even mean?
Shazam. I'm looking at the Pocket Mod right now just because, you know, I was talking about it, so I had to hold it up so you guys could see it and demonstrate.
Are those the same topic?
Yeah. Look. All right, you know what? I'm never going to use this as a topic. I've had it on the master list in my Pocket Mod for a long time, and I'm never going to use it, so let's just bring it up now. I've written Shazam/ISIS. Some of you who are old enough know exactly what I'm talking about already, and most of you do not. The Shazam ISIS Power Hour was a show when I was a kid. Shazam was obviously Captain Marvel, the DC version of Captain Marvel, and it was the kid Billy Batson and whoever his mentor was, and he discovers the powers of Captain Marvel, and when he says Shazam, he turns into Captain Marvel, blah, blah, blah. They did a live-action TV show in which they travel around the country using the great powers of Shazam, of Captain Marvel, to battle low-level thugs and dime store crooks and learning moral lessons every single week. Terrible. Terrible show. But it was also combined with ISIS. And ISIS was the Egyptian goddess Isis. Not the terrorist group Isis.
Okay, there's my confusion.
And Isis was a superhero who, I think she was a school teacher / archaeologist who discovered some pendant, necklace, emblem thing that gives her the powers of the goddess Isis, which she also uses to fight petty crooks and dime store thugs. And then learn valuable lessons by the end of every episode. And it was also a live-action show. And I remember watching these when I was a kid. And the interesting thing about them is that if someone asked you who the first female live-action superhero on TV was, you would have said Wonder Woman, and you would have been wrong because it was Isis. Isis beat out Wonder Woman by like 3 months to be the first live-action female superhero on TV. So, interesting. That's why it's in my Pocket Mod, but I've never had anything to combine that with to make it into a full topic, so I've just never brought it up. It's been there for months. So,
you're
go ahead.
96.
What?
You already rolled.
Oh, that's right. And then you talked over my roll because you clearly don't know Pod-O-Matic etiquette. So,
is there really any etiquette for this?
So, 96, but let's make the noise again just in case people forgot. Okay, it's still 96.
Thanks, R2.
96 is from Humongous. And Humongous says, does Krull still hold up? Please, you know the answer to this one.
He just wants to hear you say it.
No, it's a... say it. Hold on. Let me go see. Is Krull available for Instant Watch right now?
Please say it isn't.
Oh, I'm not going to watch it. I just want to see if that was even an option. Krull! Oh, no, I'd have to get the disc. Sorry. Yeah, okay, you see the quintuple switchblade spinning wheel of death? That's Krull's primary weapon.
You used to know the name for that thing.
Yeah, stupid. That is, Krull wasn't even... All right, well, wait a minute. Let's think about this question, because Krull was a bad movie when I was a kid and I saw it, all right?
Chakram, that's it.
It was a bad movie, you're right. A bad movie then, and so when you say has it held up, has it maintained its lofty status as a horrible movie? Probably so.
As well as the movie right below it. Oh my gosh, one of my favorite movies of all time.
Let me just tell you what. When you pull up Krull, and the second option in your list is Killer Clowns from Outer Space, you're not talking winner.
Amazing movie. Go watch it.
Yeah. Look, if you... Oh, look, Krull isn't even instant watch, or Killer Clowns isn't instant watch anymore. How sad is that? That's terrible. Okay, anyway, I'm pretty sure Krull is still a terrible movie. I mean, again.
So, does that mean it held up or it didn't?
I think it held up exactly as well as it always has. But, tell you what, Humongous, as soon as you get done watching Blood Car, watch Krull. Let me know. Because if I'm wrong, I would be happy to go back and rewatch it if you feel that it has gained some artistic merit over the years. Maybe as a retro so bad it's good movie, maybe there's something to it. Probably not. But you know what? It could happen. Anyway. There we go. 18. And 18 is way up the list. And we go to Humongous again. Have you shot a bow? Well, of course I've shot a bow. Have you shot a bow?
Yes.
You do archery in PE?
Well, yeah, but I was like the number one archer in day camp. So.
Oh, that's right. I forgot you did archery in day camp too.
Yeah, I was top of my class.
Yeah. Oh, of course you've shot. And we've shot bows with scouts, and we've shot. Oh, geez, all the time.
And
yes.
I shot Bo, my friend, and that didn't turn out well. But
he was asking for it.
Not with a bow, mind you.
Right. No, that was with a BB gun. So, anyway, yeah. I enjoy shooting. With my archery style, I tend to have a problem of scraping the hell out of the inside of my forearm with the string, which is a common problem, which is why they make a wrist guard. And I always forget the wrist guard until after I've taken off three layers of skin. And I go, oh, that's right. I wear a wrist guard. I forgot. And I've never been spectacular at archery. I enjoy the crap out of it, but I've never been as good as Aiden at it. And it's fun. I mean, I don't have a whole lot of opportunities now, but, if it came up, I am way better actually with a shotgun. When we go out shooting Blue Rock, I am actually, for a guy who never picks up a gun, who doesn't own any guns, who's never tried, I'm actually surprisingly good at shooting Blue Rock. And I attribute that to years and years of video games. Lots and lots of Duck Hunt. Number 7. 7 is also from Humongous. Who dominates? You, Humongous.
Ah.
Don't laugh at that. I'll keep doing them. Humongous says, motorboat or sailboat? Motorboat.
Yeah, whichever one lets me change direction.
Yeah, because sailboat, I don't have the time it would take to learn how to do that and do it right. I'm barely ever in a boat as it is. And so if I'm in a boat, I certainly want to be in one that has a motor on it. That really just seems like the safest option for me. The only time I've ever had to operate anything with a sail was when I was a kid. My aunt had a sailboard that she was really good at, and she would cruise up and down the...
Your what?
My aunt.
Okay.
Yeah. And she would cruise up and down the water in front of the beach where we stayed in Mexico Beach. And she was really good at it. She'd take it way out, and then she'd bring it back in, and then she'd run parallel to the beach for a long time. And she was really good at it. And she'd go any direction, turn the thing around. She knew what she was doing. And, we were 15, 16 at the time, me and my cousin. We were like, yeah, we could do that. And we got out there, and...
Pride.
neither one of us ever got that thing to ever go anywhere. I think Rob, my cousin, I think he managed to get the thing to go 15, 20 feet at one point. I mean, he could actually get up, face the wind, and get the thing to go a little bit. But then we could never maintain it. We could certainly never steer. We could never... It was really, really tough. And so, and we tried that thing forever. I mean, and when I say forever, I mean hours one day. And then maybe hours another day. I know we tried it on more than one occasion. It just never got anywhere with it. And with all that and with her instruction, never even managed to get it to really catch the wind or move at all, much less learn how to steer. So I can only imagine if that's the experience I have with a sailboard, I can't imagine an entire sailboat trying to master that sucker and the number of hours it would take to really figure out how to get that thing to work. I'm sure it can be done. Obviously, lots of people have done it. And I'm sure it's tons of fun and a great accomplishment. Just not for me at this point. I think I've actually been on a sailboat the one time when we were all in Chicago as a family and we went out on the pirate ship, and that was a sailboat, but it was a sailboat at anchor. So it's not like we actually, did we go anywhere on that boat? Did they take us out?
Yeah. They took us out far enough that we could only see the Ferris wheel.
Oh, that's right. They took us out and then they brought us back. Did they use the sails to take us out, or was there a motor there and the sails were just for show? All right. Well, then cool. Then I've been on a sailing vessel one time. So there you go. Credit for that.
13.
13 is going to be our last one. It's from Humongous. All right. Now, for anyone who's complaining that there's too much Humongous on this list, look, we just cleared off like 7 of them all at once. Pfft, not a problem. Humongous says, do you have a prejudice against D6 systems? You have never given any indication. I just hear this a lot with nerds. No, actually, I like D6 systems for the fact that they have, they use six-sided dice. Therefore, they're easy to get. I mean, D6, you can get six-sided dice at Walmart. So, you know, you can always have six-sided dice. You can go break open your old Monopoly set or whatever, and there's always regular dice laying around somewhere. Everyone has them. They're easy to obtain. And that's one of the advantages of them. And I have tried designing systems that use only six-sided dice, and the only problem I have with them is...
They don't go above six?
Oh, no, you can fix that. But I don't care much for the narrow bell curve is my problem. I don't care for dice pools the way like Shadowrun does them, where you throw out a whole bunch of dice and you're looking, you know, like a target of 4 and you count up how many dice beat the target and that's your rating. And I don't care for those. I like to just roll dice and get a result. And when you use six-sided dice, your bell curve gets really tight really fast compared to... This is one of the problems I had with the game, the original Melee game from Steve Jackson Games. And I enjoyed Melee. We played a ton of that. But it used a 3d6 roll, and it winds up being... when you roll 3d6, you're pretty much guaranteed that the vast majority of your results are going to fall between 8 and 13. I mean, you've got a range of about 5 or 6 numbers that's pretty much always going to be there, and every once in a while you get these long shots where something more extreme comes up, and those are really cool when they do happen, but your results are really predictable. And I enjoy games, especially with my kids, where I like for the extremes to happen more often, because those are more interesting to the story for me. That I like extreme success and I like extreme failure, because they make really cool things to talk about in the game. And so I'm not prejudiced against D6 games. I've played many of them. I've enjoyed many of them. I've designed a few of them. I prefer my dice to have a little more spread. I like the die 12 the best. It's just about the right range. The die 20, as much as I love Pathfinder, and I do, die 20 is a really wide range. I mean, you can have, in Pathfinder, you can have a really good bonus to whatever skill or attack or save you're rolling, a really good bonus, and yet still have like a 30 to 40% chance of failure, which is horrifying. I mean, for skills that you should be able to do this, you should know how to do this, and yet I still have a 30% chance of failure on something I should know how to do. It doesn't allow for the things that you should be relatively good at, and it's not a matter of failing, it's just a matter of the quality of your success, and die 20 doesn't allow for that as well. That's where the die sixes come in better. That's where the dice pools come in better. And so, you know, there's the right dice for the right task, I suppose. But anyway, enough of that. You know what? One more. Let's see if we can get one that doesn't have Humongous's name on it. Oh, hold on. All right. I rolled, and then I forgot to look up the number because Yancey distracted me with his phone call. 98. 98 is from Mrs. Darks, a totally non-humongous member of our boards. And Mrs. Darks says, how do you feel about naming inanimate objects? I don't have a problem with naming inanimate objects. I don't normally do so, but I can see it happening. My sons have a thing for naming their cars. And, you know, I get that. There's a long tradition of naming your vehicles. But I don't normally do it. What would you name your house if you had to, Bertha? Or does it have a name? No, it doesn't have a name. I'm sorry. No, wait. Bertha is a people name and not a house name. A house name has to be... I once stayed in a house named Gesundheit. I did. That was the name of the house. For some reason, there was this tradition when we went to the... When I was a kid, and we'd go to Mexico Beach, and we'd stay in these beach houses down there. All the rental cottages, all of them had names of some sort. And I don't know why. It was just something with the rental properties at the time. And the one that we stayed in the first 2 or 3 years that we were down there was called Gesundheit. That was just the name of the house. So... Bertha is not much of a house name. How about Casa de Bertha? Is that better? I don't know. I've never thought of naming my house. You got a name for the house?
No.
You got blank stares for me? Yes. Yes, he does. Quite so. What about your car? I've also never, ever named a car of mine, but my kids have. My oldest son's first car was a convertible, a red LeBaron convertible named Sparta. And then my second son's first car is
the exact same model of LeBaron,
a red LeBaron convertible.
Not the same LeBaron.
Named Roxy?
Yes.
Named Roxy. And, and not the same car. I have now owned, sadly, 3 1994 LeBaron convertibles, and I am not particularly fond of this car. I think it's an old piece of junk, and good Lord, what is that? Oh, that's for a meeting that I don't have. That's okay. Good. That meeting got canceled. God, that's the weirdest alarm, isn't it? Since the two sons both wound up with these LeBaron convertibles, 1994. I had a deal where a guy was getting rid of a LeBaron convertible, and he had already pulled the engine out of it, and I could pick up the body. I could pick up the rest of the car, minus the engine, and apparently minus the hood. That son of a bitch. And
most of the car now.
Well, yeah. We've kind of worked it over. But I could pick up the whole rest of the car for $100. And so it's sitting out in a field at my in-law's place, and we've just used it for parts. I've pulled... the door locking mechanism out of it to put into Jacob's old car.
The adventure of getting a tail light.
Oh yeah, we broke into it to get the tail light assembly for Aiden's car.
Crowbars make great keys.
Yes. What? Oh yeah, the trunk was terrible. They had there's no key with the car, and it's a convertible, so there's all the mechanism behind the seat, so you can't just. There's no way to pull the seat down to go in through the seat and get to the trunk. There is an interior trunk latch where you can pull the little switch, but on all three of those vehicles, that trunk latch is broken. Apparently, it snaps easily, and the trunk latch doesn't work. I mean, you can grab it long enough for me to use a pair of pliers, but you can grab the trunk latch and you can work the thing up and down. It doesn't actually release the trunk. And so eventually we got in there with a drill, and eventually we opened up a big enough hole that we could get a crowbar in there, and we worked that sucker back and forth until the trunk popped, and then boom, taillight assembly. It was very nice. So my $100 was well worth it. I have gotten more than that in parts out of the vehicle. I'm thrilled with that, but I will be glad for the day when I don't have to have 1994 LeBaron convertible red on my insurance, or that I have to go down and license every year or any of that, because I'm tired of dealing with them. I'm ready to be done with those. Okay, that is it for the Potomatic. This show is at an end. The only thing left is to bring on GLaDOS, and she will recap this episode for us. Take it away.
Remember when the platform was sliding into the fire pit and I said goodbye, and you were like,
no way.
And then I was all, we pretended we were going to murder you.
That was great.
This podcast is copyright 2015 by Nerd Pride Radio. The opening and closing theme is Death Metal Disco by Ian Kronk. My bumper music this week is Weezer's In the Garage and My Son the Astronaut by Oppenheimer. I can't do it as well as Kyle does. All of these songs are available on iTunes. Check them out. Buy them. Enjoy them. I wouldn't include them in a podcast if I didn't love them. If you want to do something nice for this podcast, recommend it to a friend. If you enjoy my podcast, then spread the word and let other people enjoy it. Word of mouth is what I live by. Don't forget to check out the free games I have available on my free games page. Instant Game, Animal Ball, Melee, Sandbox Hill, 2/3 of a dozen others, all free all the time. If you want to contact me, you can always email me at mike@nerdprideradio.com. I promise you I will actually respond to you. I stumbled because I forgot the .com part. Sorry about that. Or find me on Twitter, where my Twitter handle is @NerdPrideRadio. Check me out on Facebook, facebook.com/NerdPrideRadio. But to be totally honest, the very best way to talk to me is you come, you sign up for my forums at NerdPrideRadio.com/forums. Sign up there, you send me a message. We will hang out together. We will be best friends in the world. We'll have fun. Wait, the show's not over yet? Then it must be time for some listener betrayal. That's right. When I start recording the podcast each week, I put out a little post on my website that says, hey, we're recording. And then anyone who wants to can go ahead and pitch in with anything that they would like me to add right here in the listener betrayal segment at the end of the podcast. Let me go ahead and close that thread down right now. Done. And well, there's some stuff in here, so this is good. Let's see what we got. Oh my, this is going to take a while. Talvin posts up and says, thoughts about two middle-aged males role-playing a couple of teenage characters in a sexual relationship? Creepy or not?
Well, that depends.
Oh,
are you in person?
They're not in person. This is in our Roll20 campaign, Pathfinder, that we're playing right now. And Talvin, the gentleman who has asked the question, and Zen, the other person here, are both middle-aged men around my age who have teenage children of their own. I believe Zen has teenage children. I know Talvin has college-age kids, as well as others. And Talvin plays Eldthor, 18-year-old ranger, and Zen plays Kayliana, ranger druid, I should have said. Kayliana, the super hot teenaged sorcerer slash rogue, and the two of them are currently boning like crazy within the game. Now, seeing as how they are both middle-aged men with their own teenage kids, and they are role-playing online, role-playing teenagers who are in a sexual relationship. Is that creepy?
Yeah. My question is, do you have to roll for how well you do?
Yes, that is what... Oh, God, what was the thing? This was from the Animal Cast, but I think it was a dexterity roll for that? And we all went, dexterity? Charisma at the very least? What is that? Acrobatics? What do you check? All right, so anyway.
Stealth.
It's an old joke. Yeah, stealth. Oh, no, that's bad. You're a bad person.
Well, I mean, for your first time, it was a spot check for her.
Ooh. This is why I don't invite you to these things. yeah, you know what, dude? A little creepy, but best game I've ever played in. So I really, do you see my face? This is the face of me not judging, okay? I've got my own weird stuff going on with my teenage girl character, so I am not going to judge you in the least, although I'm judging you a little bit. But not much, okay? Talvin also says, how awesome is DM Darks, our dungeon master? I know you covered this in the previous podcast, but it bears repeating. Oh my god, he's awesome! We love Darks. Darks, you're the greatest. We're going to game tonight. I think it's on for tonight. It is tonight, right? Yeah, it's tonight. And I'm really looking forward to this. So it's going to be a good, good game. I'm really excited. Aliahad posts up next. Everybody got in on this. Everybody. Aliahad says, how do you feel about the Oxford comma?
Stupid.
Yeah, I feel like a hypocrite. That when I think Oxford comma, anytime someone says Oxford comma, I feel like a hypocrite. Because I did an entire fingertips episode on the Oxford comma and talked about how much I thought it was mostly unnecessary, although there are times when you're going to want to use it just to be on the safe side, you know, for clarity's sake, but that it's really, really pointless and not needed. And I, at that point, professed that I don't use an Oxford comma. And it turns out I was really, really mistaken, because apparently I use the Oxford comma almost every time I have the option to do so. Because having done that podcast, I am hyper aware of it. And every time it comes up, I see it and I go, oh, Oxford comma, I don't need to do that. And so I take my Oxford comma out and then I look at it and go, oh, it looks wrong. And then I put it back in. I was just helping my son last night proofread an essay for English class where there was a place for the Oxford comma, and he wisely did not put it in there because it didn't need to be there. It took all of my willpower not to correct him. I didn't realize I had such a... I have always made use of the Oxford comma, apparently, and done so at such an unconscious level that when I did a podcast about it, I just went in willy-nilly claiming that I don't ever use Oxford commas because I didn't even realize I did. I am such a hypocrite. I am such a bad, bad person. I can't believe I did that. So what you learn from that is that you can't trust anything I've ever said. I could be lying to you guys all the time and not even know I'm doing it. I am that kind of pathological.
So when you say don't trust you, should we not trust that statement either?
No, don't. Don't. Absolutely. Everything I say is a lie. Stan says, where's your God now? What's their alignment? They might be giants, but if not, what else might they be? And what's the scariest form of transport you have ever taken? Okay, where's your God now, and what's their alignment? Does God, by definition, have to be neutral? I kind of think so. They might be giants, but if not, what else might they be?
Leprechauns.
Well, they might be giants, boy. They might be giants. Might be rain. They might be Dr. Spock's backup band. That's what they might be. I knew there was a lyric I was looking for, though. I'm just sad that I had to sing the whole song to get to that point.
They also might be windmills.
That's true. They might be. What is the scariest form of transport you have ever taken?
The TARDIS.
In real life.
The TARDIS.
Scariest form of transport I have ever taken. That is a great question. And I don't have a good answer. I know there is a good answer. Because I'm not scared by flying, or trains, or boats, or cars in general.
Let's call it walking for now.
Because this is going to get really boring for me to just roll through boiled shrimp, fried shrimp scampi, Shrimp. No, I got nothing. My next, I had to stop that line of thought because my next one was going to be shrimp a la mode, and I got no way to go with that one. I don't know. The scariest thing I can think of is riding the little at Mount Rushmore, riding the little scooter sled thing down the mountain. You remember that one? He doesn't remember that one. We weren't at Mount Rushmore. We were actually in Keystone nearby, but they have all their little tourist trap things. And there's the one bit where you go all the way to the top of the mountain, and there's a cafe up there, and everyone has lunch, and you walk around their little mountaintop gardens. And then to get back down to your car in the parking lot, you wind up getting on this little cart that rides a little track that races down the side of the mountain back to where your car is parked. And that was, but even that wasn't bad, but it was still, oh, I know, haunted hayrack ride. That would be the scariest mode of transport I've ever been on. Not so much the hayrack itself. That was not scary. But, okay, can you hear the train? Okay, that is perfectly timed because the best haunted hayrack ride we went on, we go to Ponca every year and we ride the haunted hayrack ride. One year, they have us stopped. The hayrack stops and we're waiting because they've acted like there's something up ahead, some accident or something that they have to clear out the road. And while we're stopped, they have a fake train come out of the trees, and it's huge with these giant lights and this massive blasting horn. And this train with its lights on us and the horn blasting comes out of nowhere as if it's going to run over the hayrack. That was scary. And people screamed. There were people trying to climb out of the wagon. It was really, really funny. That was pretty scary. Let's move on. Lucy comments on Talvin asking about the creepy role players, and she laughs about that one and then says, which playset of Fiasco are you going to choose? Oh, I am really tempted to do the space station one, because I'm scared of doing the historical ones, because I always feel a lot of pressure to get historical accuracy, which I realize is not required. We're doing, you know, Fiasco is playing out a movie in this setting, and movies don't have to be historically accurate. But history feels a little too much pressure. I would rather go with something that I feel I've got a grasp on immediately. So that is either like the time travel, but then that might still wish for some historical stuff. The space station, there's one for Paranoia, but if I wanted to do that, I'd just play Paranoia. Or there's one that's the politics of monsters in a D&D setting. It's actually, the title of it's actually a play of Keep on the Borderlands. I think it's Keeping on the Borderlands or something like that. And I would want to do the D&D-based one, except that we've done so much Pathfinder lately that I kind of want to get away from that into a new genre entirely. So I'm really narrowing it down to the space station. That's really, or Elizabethan England. I know I said no historical, but I have a real fondness for Shakespeare's plays. And if I did Elizabethan England, I feel like I've got enough of a grasp on that because you'd play it out like you think of classical Shakespeare plays. And I've read enough Shakespeare and studied enough Shakespeare that I feel like I could accurately get a comedic grasp of that setting, even if it's not historically accurate. I think I could get the right feel for that one pretty quick. So either Elizabethan England or the space station. Those are the two. And I'm going to put my vote in for space station right now, but you know what? There's other people playing, and whatever people decide, I'll go with anything. It doesn't make any difference to me. I just want to get a chance to play this. Then Lucy really likes the They Might Be Giants, but if not, what else might they be? Lucy then says, we have just been talking about favorite X-Men characters on the site. If you could be any of them, which one would it be? Nightcrawler. I love Nightcrawler. I love teleporting. I love Nightcrawler. He's cool. I love the super agility. I love the quick wit. And I love teleporting. Not to mention he's a devilishly handsome blue-furred demon with a tail, prehensile tail. Come on. There's so much to love about this. I'd be Nightcrawler. Ooh, someone named Kyle has posted up. He says, hi, Mike. As you know, I'm not listening to podcasts this year, so I can focus my creative efforts on in my downtime to developing my third novel, and it's going great. I've already cranked out 13,000 words in the last 2 weeks. But here's my point. That means that next year when I start catching up on my missed podcasts, I'll probably be listening to this episode in January. So I want to send a message to future Kyle. Hi, future Kyle! Is the third book great? I'll bet it is! I'll bet you're done and just finishing the last of the editing now. You're awesome, future Kyle. With love and sincerity, past Kyle. End quote. I never started the quotes, but that's where the quote would end. Aw, that is so sweet. And that is maybe the best use of listener betrayal I've ever seen. That is great, Kyle. Not everyone is going to be in the position of not listening to the podcast for a year, but for those of you who are, take a tip from Kyle. Look what you could do. Akiva. Akiva warns Kyle, don't do it! You'll create a time paradox and destroy everything! Lucy, is Kyle a real person or just some distant cousin whose picture you employ to occasionally make us believe that there is a person named Kyle? Have you not met Kyle? Lucy? Have you not? Your husband lived with him for like 3 years. They were lovers for a time. How could you not believe in Kyle? This is not like, you know, believing in Santa Claus or the Secretary General of the UN. This is Kyle. I am shocked. Akiva says, we should start posting on this thread in shifts so that Mike can never finish. As long as we keep posting, he keeps recording, right? No, because I put in the done before I start reading them, because otherwise you guys will go on forever. And I have this fear that I will be reading through them, and as I'm reading through them, I'm not refreshing the page every time, and I would be afraid that someone would get some posts in there that I then don't read. Because I didn't see them, and then I would feel really, really bad. So I'd rather do the, I'd rather just stop it, cut it off at a point, and then go in. So yeah, I stopped this like 20 minutes ago. You guys could have had 20 more minutes to be adding stuff, but I can't do that. Kyle, and this is the last comment. Kyle says, oh, also, future Kyle. Hi, dude. Did that twitchy tear duct stop? If not, dude, go to the doctor already. You're the best. Future Kyle. I'm sorry. I thought he was signing it, so I paused as if he was signing it. But it's actually, you're the best, future Kyle.
But who's it from, then?
Well, it's from Kyle.
But he didn't sign it.
The sad part about that one is Kyle has an itchy tear duct and a twitchy tear duct. And Kyle suspects that there's a very real possibility that he might not take care of that for a year. Dude, seriously. All right, let's note that if future Kyle, as long as we're all talking to future Kyle here, future Kyle, if you still have the twitchy tear duct, let's please note you've had it for a year. I know, you just keep putting it off. Oh, I'll get to it next week. But let's note that if someone asked you, how long have you had that twitchy tear duct? Oh, I don't know. A few months. I don't know. No, it's been over a year, dude. What is wrong with you? You wouldn't let your kids go this long without medical care. Why are you so much less important than them? You're the breadwinner here. They rely on you. You have eight young lives depending on you. Well, mostly they depend on your wife. And I assume that if your twitchy tear duct kills you, that, you know, they can live off your insurance money for a while. But you're also important. To a degree. Dude, seriously, get that checked out. And then we're done. That's it. That's the end of the cast. Say goodnight, Aiden.
Goodnight.
Say goodnight, R2.